This is the Nick and Jules podcast.
All right, we're back.
Hello.
Hi.
Roll call. All right.
Jules present.
Aaliyah present.
Very well, as you are.
Look on. He's well, not
the,
present.
I'm the adjudicator, so I feel like it just assumed that I'm. It's like, you know, if we're taking the role, it's like the teacher. If the role's being taken, the teacher's there. You know, like just in, by default. Mm.
That makes sense. Well, and yeah. You press the buttons. You control the microphones, whether or not we are present.
If this podcast is going up, I'm present.
So true.
If we're being heard in a public forum, I'm present.
Congrats to you.
That's good. That I have. I mean, that my one part of the contract that I signed is I'm coming through with that. We've just been hearing about reality TV.
Yes.
From you, Jules.
What a world.
A dangerous world, potentially.
Yeah, and one reality TV star has posited the idea of having, like, a union to protect the contestants, the participants in these shows.
Mm.
I don't know exactly what that would entail, but it's like she says, like, so for this particular person, her show was Married at First Sight.
Yep.
And even though it's finished airing in Australia, now it's in Finland. It's in all different countries and she's getting, you know, potentially hate or other contestants could be getting certain messages at different times. And I understand for a lot of these series, they have people employed to help them out and to monitor comments and turn all that stuff off for that season when it airs in their local market.
Of course.
Correct.
Then what happens beyond that?
So the Finnish, they're watching Australian Married at First Sight, are they?
I guess so.
Wow.
That's kind of cool.
It's interesting because I imagine that there would be, because obviously Married at First Sight, there would be other countries doing it.
Yeah, there's the UK one, and I'm pretty sure one of the Australian experts, we'll say, goes on that as well.
Oh.
Which one? Do you remember the guy? John Aiken? Feels like
he gets around. No, the blonde one that I quite like. Oh. I was like, oh. She's two-timing us. She only
died recently?
No, that was Trish Starkhead.
Yeah.
But she finished up in 2020 because she said it wasn't love anymore.
No, that's fair.
I don't think it was to begin with, Trish, but that's okay.
That's my opinion.
That's my opinion.
Like two seasons of Married at First Sight was quite wholesome. I remember that.
Comparative to what it's become.
Yeah, I remember.
At the time, I was like, this is suspect.
Well, there was no studio. There was no, like, stage dinner parties. I remember it was just like at some random person's house.
Was it really?
Yeah, like one of the contestants' house. I'm pretty sure it was like, hey guys, everyone come over and we'll chat. And it was quite wholesome.
I remember, were you in radio when the first season started, when it first started in this country?
No.
I think I maybe was. And I vaguely remember having some of the contestants early on. And it was just like.
Was Bella Frizzer on it by that stage? I think she was first or second season.
Oh.
She's a radio girl.
Yes,
up in Goldie.
I remember watching her season and she was painted as the sexually active one all the time and stuff. And it's like everyone was judging that then. And now you look at the crap that made the seasons and you're like, are you serious?
In terms of the archetypes that are on these shows, what would you, not necessarily what do you think you actually are, but like what would you
I'm the villain.
Well, yeah, what would you want to be? Would you want to be the villain?
Well, you can't control it, can you? You don't know you're the villain until it's done.
You get to control it. How you are depicted. Which one do you come across as?
Well, what are the profiles we're working with?
So you've got your villain. Mm-hmm. You've got your sexually promiscuous one. You've got like
the sidekick to the villain.
Yeah, just the bitch.
Mm.
You've got
This feels more bachelor territory than that.
Okay,
well, I mean, to be honest, they're quite similar in that vein. It's just that one is polyamorous and then the other one is supposed to be monogamous.
Yes, but
there's always a cheating in quotation marks, like storyline. Mm. There's always one every season.
There was a Married at First Sight guy, I think recently, that I read a headline that during the filming of it, he like hooked up with some 18-year-old or at a club.
Oh, yes.
During the season. I was like, that's
that's
ballsy, isn't it? Is that a thing that happened?
I don't believe it was during the season. It had happened, I think it was, I think you might be right. It was during the season, I remember, because
he was supposed to be,
we interviewed this girl.
That's how it came up.
Was he with Mel, the guy in question? Mel was the one that wanted sex all the time, in quotation marks.
Oh, no. It wasn't Mel. No, this is a different person. It was a different season from that Mel.
Disregard.
So he technically they were still together, and he had gone out and was there was a TikTok filmed of him making out with a 20-year-old.
Who? Tell me. Tell me who it was.
I can't remember his name. Damn it. Let me look it up. I'm pretty sure his name started with a J. They always do.
J's are dodgy names.
See, I've already forgotten all the 2022 people.
It's actually in really, I don't know if it's impressive necessarily, but it's
my knowledge of this.
Well, yeah, your ability to remember the character, the people that were on these shows.
Because the storylines were fed to us so well.
True.
I suppose you did watch it more often than, like I would watch it maybe like one every five episodes, if that, but who was it?
So it was.
And Jules, you have to tell us if this means anything to you.
Yeah, okay, great. Probably.
So this was last year. His name was Jackson Loney.
Jackson.
And he was with Olivia Fraser.
Yes, the one who was painted as the most villain of villains.
Jackson.
Yes. No, Olivia.
Olivia.
So the previous season we had Bryce was like, oh my God, he was the biggest villain. And then they topped it the next year with, oh, the villain can be female. It's Olivia.
The villain can
she
be
didn't seem
insert
to be that
eye
great.
Roll here.
Yeah.
So then she went off to Scotland.
I was reading a story this morning about speaking of, you know, married at first sight people ducking overseas. A Daily Mail article, so take it with a grain of salt. this morning of Hayley Vernon.
Yeah.
She's now like a OnlyFans person.
She has for a while, yeah. I think she's one of the top creators in Australia.
I think she's quite wealthy off the back of it. Which is good on you. Go get your bag. She is doing a tour of Europe just getting
a sex tour.
Just getting dicked down in every country.
Experiencing the culture.
Sorry, what else are you going to do?
Well, and then but
when you're in that line of work.
I think she's saying that she had to flee Czechoslovakia because not Czechoslovakia, the
Czech Republic.
Czech Republic. Because
can't say that. I'm told don't say it, don't say it.
I have to flee because I got told the wrong country name. She has to flee because she was worried that she was gonna get trafficked.
So, yikes.
Yeah, isn't that what an insane thing to you know? Have happened. Was that something that was said to you when you were in Europe, Jules? Just like some of the countries you're in that just be on the lookout because, you
know. No, it was more like keep your belongings at the front and, you know, don't put your phone in your back pocket. Nothing to that extent
of trafficking. Not like how you're going to get kidnapped?
No, wasn't that. Maybe follow the tour guide was more, you know, to know where we're going. Yeah.
Hayley obviously wasn't following the tour guide. No.
What Kentucky was she on?
Would you be such a bold move, like on the off chance you are one of these, I'm assuming it's a gang sort of activity of some description. But
wouldn't know.
It's probably not an individual doing it. But imagine kidnapping someone who's got public profile to then try and.
How foolish. People would notice before. She hasn't uploaded to her story.
It's happened before. Do you remember the singer Duffy?
No.
She sang that song, "You Got Me Begging You for Mercy."
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
She blew up in the industry, right, with that song, and then she disappeared for a while and people were like, oh, she just fell off. It's no big deal.
Yeah, she hasn't had a hit.
Yeah, she came out a few years ago saying that she had been, held hostage.
Oh, my God. For how long? Where was it?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I will tell you. Trey Sad. Anyway, that took a dark turn.
Actually, do you want to hear a slightly, it starts dark but then gets interesting.
Sure.
Turn in terms of kidnapping someone with public profile.
Okay.
Oh, niche.
So this happened early 2000s, maybe the 90s. This happened, but so over in, take you to North Korea right now. So the bloke running the show now, Kim Jong-un, I think he's the son of Kim Jong-il, who was in power for a lot longer comparatively. And so Kim Jong-il was a real big fan of, despite the fact that, you know, he ran North Korea, loved Western culture and was a big fan of Western movie and just like loved the whole Hollywood machine, I think, right? So he had at one point apparently, and I don't know if this is like verified, but this is what I've heard, that at some point he had the biggest collection of movies in the world ever.
Oh.
And he had like a compound, you know, near where he lived where it was just, it just housed the VHSs and the DVDs and just everything you could play.
Take up so much space.
And he had everything because he just loved it. And because of that, he was really disappointed that North Korea could never create movies on par with the quality of Western Hollywood, right? So what he did was, I can't remember the woman's name. And that's the part of the story where you know, people are going to have to Google this themselves. But He went and he orchestrated the kidnapping of, at the time, one of the biggest Asian actresses in the industry.
I have heard about this. Continue. Yeah,
it's like, you know, I'm pulling this out of my mouth, but like the Angelina Jolie, but specific to Asian film at the time, right? Mm-hmm. And he kidnapped her and she was also, I think, quite known for working with one specific film director.
Okay.
And so Kim Jong-il's people kidnapped both her and the director.
Yeah.
And effectively held them in North Korea for so long, and everyone assumed that they were dead. Or like, no one knew, had any idea where they were. But the idea was these two people were going to just make movies
for him,
for North Korea and for him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then what happened, the reason why we know about this and why it sort of came out that this is what's going on is because after a while they were making movies and he's like, they're still not good enough. And the director and the actors were like, well, because you only let us film in North Korea, right? Like, obviously.
Did he have any like supporting co-stars or anything like that? It was just her.
Maybe him. No, there were other actors and actresses, but she was the star of every movie, effectively.
Yeah.
But the way that they got out was they went, "Hey, if you want to make movies as good as the ones you like, you've got to let us go elsewhere to film. Like, we've got to go to other countries because that's where all the other stuff is." And he goes, "Fine." And so he sent them with a security detail to Italy. And somewhere in Italy, I think it was, they were shooting and somehow they managed to get away and they ran to the consulate and were like, hey, you know, we've been missing for a few years. This is what's up. And that's how the world knows.
Yes.
So you've Googled this, have you?
I have.
So
I found it.
Can you verify? Because I'm certain I probably got like a lot.
There was most of it was correct. Okay. So the actress's name was Choi Eun-hee. And the director was actually her ex-husband, then ex-husband, Shin Sang-ok. And they were kidnapped in 1978.
Oh, so this is a lot longer ago than
I thought. Yeah, so she was basically, the Angelina Jolie of South Korea the 60s and the 70s.
Massive, massive.
Yep, the story that you said of them being like, oh, we need to go and film elsewhere. So they basically sought asylum in Vienna.
Beautiful.
In 1986, and then they returned to South Korea in 1999 after they'd spent a decade in the States.
Wow.
Moved about So if you ever get kidnapped, suggest to your kidnapper you'd like to make a movie elsewhere.
In Vienna.
Preferably somewhere that has an embassy.
So Hayley, the Hayley Vernon equivalent of this is, look, I want to film porn in Vienna. Because that's where
the Rolling Hills.
That's what the Rolling Hills. The penises are multiple.
Love the angles of the Rolling Hills. That'll be much better for filming.
All right, that's the podcast. A little bit of history for you.
Yeah.
A little bit of history.
Who would have thought?
A reality TV. Yeah, who would have thought we'd get there from reality TV unions?
Every day is a school day.
Hey, we'll see you tomorrow on the podcast, everybody.
Nick, you speak a little bit of Italian.
See, I do know a little bit.
You love the language.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country, beautiful people. I've never been, but, you know, God, I'd love to. Isn't it funny to be so interested in something that you've never really interacted that much with?
It's nice. It's wholesome. I think you would really appreciate this moment that I had when I was overseas in Italy, and I had this beautiful Florence dinner. It was good pizza, good pasta, you sit down, get the wine. And as soon as our group walked in, there was about 50 of us. There was this big, like, maitre d' with this beautiful energy, all welcoming us in, making sure we're having a great time.
And you just know that they probably hated you. Like, 50 people, imagine walking in just off the street. I assume you had a booking, but my God, otherwise.
He's getting paid by all of us. He knew we were coming. It was all above board. He was probably being extra friendly to get all the tips.
Well, why would you not be?
He's walking around the tables and he's, like, making sure we're having a great time. And all of a sudden you hear this guy behind the piano playing a little bit of background dinner music. And this restaurant owner brings out this huge operatic voice.
Wow.
Like, oh my God. Didn't realize this guy, restaurant owner and opera singer, which one came first? Don't care. Love the vibe. He's walking around the table. He's like singing to us. And he says to us, do you guys have any requests while eating dinner? And everyone's eating away and whatnot. He comes over and I said, oh, actually, I've got a request. I really love Andrea Bocelli's The Prayer.
Not one that we play a lot during the show, but
it's one of those classic opera songs that you think of.
I mean,
Really? I've never heard of it?
I don't know if I know any classic opera songs. Sorry.
Okay.
Obviously different sides of the tracks, Jules.
It's the one opera song I know. Let's just say that.
Okay.
And he goes, oh, yeah, si, Andrea Bocelli, love him. No, not the prayer. I'm like, okay, whatever. 10 minutes pass.
Sure.
And then he gets on the mic. Everything else stops. And he says, I have a song request for a beautiful woman. And then everyone is turning their chair around to look at me. This guy is eyeballing me. And he starts...
Well, you were a beautiful woman.
He starts singing a song, and it is Andrea Bocelli, but I have no idea what the song is. It's all in Italian. He starts singing it, and everyone's going, yeah, Jules, yes. I have no idea what it is. Huh. I'm like, yeah, smiling. I'm like, yeah, it's beautiful. Really kind of embarrassed, going, okay, thank you.
This is the equivalent of when you get happy birthday sung to you. And you're at a restaurant.
You don't know what to do. I'm like, thanks, but guys, I didn't request this song. Huh. So we have the moment. I'm like, yeah, well done, beautiful singing. And then everyone goes back to their dinner. About 10 minutes or so, maybe 20 minutes passes. And then all of a sudden, the piano guy starts up again.
Sure.
And the opera singer starts again. And the most unlikely song I've ever heard comes out of Italy. Oh, when the saints in Europe, in this Florence restaurant, my football club song comes out. And I'm like, who's done this? Who's put this song request in for me? Every single person on the trip knew that that was my football song. People are up and dancing. There's cutlery banging off the table. I'm like, finally, she's got her moment.
It's nice of them to celebrate. Obviously, there's a bit of a time delay, time zone difference. They didn't realize that they were already kicked out of the finals by this point. I got to imagine, Jules, that when you are, you know, a family looking to start with a newborn, there's so many things that you got to look forward to.
Oh, my gosh.
So many things that are difficult that you look forward to.
Yes.
One of those is, of course, coming out with a name. Someone that's been turning heads for the choice of name is a new mother who joins us right now, Kirsten Drysdale. She's an ABC TV presenter and journalist. Good morning, Kirsten.
Good morning.
Kirsten, lovely to have you. You've certainly got a lot of people surprised by your choice of baby name. Can you talk to us about what you went with?
Yeah, look, we chose the name Methamphetamine Rules. Mm. You know, fairly unique name, we thought.
I think so. I don't know. I didn't go to school with too many methamphetamines.
No, maybe some Matthews or some Nathaniels, though.
Yeah, a bit more common with where I grew up. Look, Kirsten, yeah, why, I suppose, is the big head turner here.
Yeah, look, okay, obviously we didn't really intentionally mean to name our child this. I work on a show called What the FAQ for the ABC, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m, and I was in the course of my job researching a question that some viewers had sent in about what you can and can't legally call your baby.
Right.
So what we, you know, we recorded the segment, we went through what all the rules are, and we discovered that interestingly, if parents don't submit an acceptable name, the registrar will assign a name to a baby. Oh. And that was the question we were trying to find an answer to. And we did directly ask the registry and they didn't answer us. So I happened to be heavily pregnant at the time of recording our segment. So we were in a position where we thought, well, we'll find out. We'll submit the most outrageous name we can think of that we are very confident will be refused, and then they will have to assign a name, and we'll see what they choose. But unfortunately, this name did slip through the cracks and arrived on the birth certificate.
Oh my God!
And you've got a little baby meth on your hands now.
Yeah, a little beautiful baby meth. Yes,
probably not what you'd think a journalist, a presenter, a person of your caliber would go for. But you know, all in the name of content, I suppose. What was your husband thinking when you were going through that? Is he on board?
Look, he was on board. I obviously, of course, discussed it with him beforehand.
Because it was a family name, so obviously he was proud to.
Yeah, you know, it was in honour of his great-grandfather, so he was, he felt stoked. No, look, when I said to him, look, we want to do this thing for the show, I think there's, you know, I had to accept that there was a theoretical risk. I said, look, there's probably, I reckon, a 0.01% chance that this gets through. You know, you have to allow for human error or catastrophic system failure, but we really truly did not think that this would happen. We didn't set out to do this. This is just an unfortunate mishap, which, I mean, it's inadvertently we've exposed that there might need to be some tightening up of the processes in the New South Wales Registry of Births, Deaths and Marriages.
In a perfect world, like assuming this hasn't fallen through the gap, so they just pick, like, you know, you've got baby meth, but alternatively they might say, you know what, obviously baby meth, not a good name. The register will say, it's going to be Aaron or it's going to be Daniel or it's going to be Stephanie instead.
So this is the thing. We still don't have an answer to that from the New South Wales Department. But interestingly, for your listeners, I saw a comment on our Facebook page from a guy who claims to have formerly worked for the Victorian Births, Deaths and Marriages Registry. And he says that in Victoria, what would happen was they would choose a name from the top five most popular baby names for boys or girls that year.
Oh.
So we're trying to confirm that, but that was, you know, that was all we were trying to find out. Innocently curious question. But the New South Wales people, they still haven't sort of told us what happens. But apparently that is what happens in Victoria.
Yeah, right.
Good to know.
What's the process for changing the baby name back to something maybe you had in mind for the last 9 months?
Have you grown attached to it?
Oh, you know what? He's really grown into the name and now we're...
He's got no teeth. Losing his hair.
It suits him. No, look, we are... the registry here have been really, really great. They're working with us to do a process of correction, which is slightly different to a change of name. But to change a name is almost more involved than to register a name in the first place. Mm. And you only get a certain number of name changes in your lifetime, I believe.
Oh.
I would advise people don't do this and don't just willy-nilly, you know, submit joke names because you never know what the outcome could be. And also with an official change of name, the original name will be on your birth certificate. So we're working with the registry to do the correction so that this doesn't appear on my beautiful baby boy's birth certificate with his real and very, very normal name, I assure you.
Oh, we're looking forward to seeing the strapping young lad grow up without the meth attached to him.
Yep.
And incredible, all in the pursuit of research. This is all part of What the FAQ. You can catch it on ABC TV Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. or you can catch the episode that included this on ABC iView. It's part of episode 4, which is up right now. Kirsten, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Who's the best around? Jules, I will give you two celebrities today, and you have got to tell me which of those two celebrities is the best, who's good enough to have their own video game, because we've just learnt that everyone's favourite Australian cattle dog, Bluey, is going to be getting his own video game.
Oh, so wholesome. I love this.
It's an honour that's only bestowed to the biggest celebrities in the world.
Right.
So today your task will be to determine who is, better enough of a celebrity, the best celebrity.
Yep.
In each pairing to try and get themselves a video game. Up first, two artists that we play here on the station fairly frequently. We've got Eminem up against 50 Cent.
Which rapper?
Yeah, which rapper has their own video game?
I just would love the concept of 50 Cent having one that's like an educational maths game.
Yeah, like a 25 cent and a 25 cents. That's how you get me.
I'm looking in for that reason, 50 Cent.
For that reason only. All right. You would be, Jules.
Correct.
50 Cent, Blood on the Sand.
What's that about?
It's not about him being educational. It's 50 Cent gets sent to the Middle East to fight terrorists.
Oh.
It's from a different time.
Wouldn't have picked that, that's for sure.
Nope. moving on to, people more in the acting space. We've got The Rock.
The Rock is cooking.
Up against the Fresh Prince himself, Will Smith.
Keep my wife's name out your
Well, okay. The Rock seems a very busy man. I mean, just looking at his breakfast diet, there's just so many things he has to cook. Has he got time to voice a video game? Then Will Smith, like, he's been canned from certain areas. Maybe he's got more time off his sleeve, so I'll say Will Smith.
Yeah, Will Smith?
Yeah.
Maybe the game's about, you know, getting his wife's name out of people's mouths.
That's
there's
it.
So many people out there saying his wife's name. Will Smith.
Oh.
The Rock has his own video game, The Rock Apocalypse.
Tell me more, Nick.
Wildly Unsuccessful. There's a bit of fighting in there. There's a bit of racing. There's a bit of everything. It's not on many platforms and very hard to find. I couldn't find a way to. I tried to buy it online just before.
Did you?
It would be pretty funny.
Just to support him.
Well, he's fallen on hard times. All right, to wrap things up, Jules, to wrap it up, we've got Lindsay Lohan, of course.
Oh. On October 3rd, he asked me what day it was.
It's October 3rd.
Which is only, you know, just over a week and a half away. Up against Mary-Kate and Ashley, the Olsen twins.
You got it, dude.
Who's got a video game? Which of those two sets of celebs? Or one set, but who's got a video game?
This takes me back to my childhood. Lindsay Lohan, what has she been doing lately? Oh, she's had a child, she's been busy with that. But not much in between, so maybe it could be an old video game. Mary-Kate and Ashley, they've done fashion, they've done perfume. I feel like
they got more
natural
on their
extension.
Plate.
No, I think they've got a team that will help them branch out to everything. They've got a video game.
Mary-Kate and Ashley have a video game.
Yes!
They do indeed. It's called Mary-Kate and Ashley, Sweet 16, Licensed to Drive.
Say no more.
I couldn't really tell what it was based on the gameplay. It kind of looks, it does look like Grand Theft Auto in some parts. I assume that it's not that. But it's like them and their friends just playing little party games.
Oh, so fun. Yeah, I want it now.
Incredibly wholesome. That's how you play your... I meant to say who.
That was the Nick and Jules podcast.